Do you feel lucky, punk? It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The housebroken Medicare podcast. He wonders why Lucas McCain never carried a pistol. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. You may have heard my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, announce my identity, but I never tire of hearing my own name, so I'm going to say it again. I'm Doug Jones, and I am your Medicare expert for today. I often tell people that I'm a Medicare expert because I just know a lot of stuff, but in reality, I had to do years and years of research, and I recorded all of my findings into a book that you are able to purchase for a very reasonable price. If you're interested in Medicare, I would suggest that you go to the Medicare shelf at the Amazon bookstore at amazon.com. I'm having a little trouble here because my pest control guy is waving at me and giving me sign language across the street. And as I look out my office window, I'm seeing his truck with a giant picture of a scorpion on it. And his job is to make sure that I never actually see one in real life. And so far, he's doing a fine job. Anyway, so if you go to Amazon and type in the search window, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024, you're going to find yourself faced with a decision. Which of the wonderful editions of Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024 will be best for you? You can purchase the Kindle edition, which will give you instant gratification for less than $5. That book will be downloaded to your reading device in no time flat. You can listen to the Audible version, which is the kind of reading that actually does all the work for you. It puts the knowledge right into your brain without you having to do much work at all to acquire that knowledge. Most people seem to appreciate the paperback version, and that's a $9 item, and you will be well served by that. It is the edition that most people tend to buy. And then, of course, we have your high rollers, your big spenders, who appreciate the finer things in life, and they typically go for the hardcover version of the book. It's a masterfully constructed repository of Medicare knowledge, and that goes for a mere $24. But who can put a price tag on quality? But in any event, once you acquire Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024, you're going to find yourself in possession of Medicare knowledge that will stand you an excellent service if you have a Medicare encounter coming up, or it could be an excellent gift for a friend or relative if they've got a birthday coming up or a retirement coming up this year. Any number of things can trigger the need to deal with Medicare, and I bet if you think about it, you can think of some people on your gift list that would be able to use some additional Medicare knowledge. So they would appreciate, I'm sure, your thoughtfulness. In any event, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. And another fact that you should always remember is the name of my cohort, my producer, my engineer, my podcast buddy, Randy Carson. He's sitting right across the screen from me right now. Hello, Randy. How are things today?
Hey, how are you today, Doug? I'm trying to figure out what's on your T-shirt.
Oh boy, this was a gift from my daughter-in-law in Austin, Texas, and I can't read it upside down and backwards, but it has to do with D. Jones manure.
Oh, manure hauling.
Hills. Manure hauling, yes.
Hills and Val. Oh, so you were in that business, or still are?
Apparently she thinks I was, and when she ran across this T-shirt, and it wasn't enough for her to get one for me. She had to get one for everybody in the family, and so when we go out dressed alike in our D. Jones manure hauling T-shirts, we make quite the group.
Oh, my God. You're going to have to. Okay, now I've got to have it. I've got to ask Mary to send me a picture of you in your manure shirt.
Well, I'll have her do that today.
I would really love to have that, because you know something? I don't have one, but I wish I had something similar. But I can't Jones manure hauling. No,
or a D Jones. You have to have a Carson, an R Carson manure hauling shirt.
Yeah,
and I just don't know if they exist. This is an actual manure hauling company in Iowa or someplace, not too far.
No kidding. I thought that was just something she put together.
Nope. This was an actual design from a company that existed that was reproduced and sold to people. And apparently the idea of manure hauling is very popular. Now, what have you got on your shirt? It's the something green, 71%.
The green dragon.
Oh, the green dragon.
Yeah.
And that's in Boston.
It's in Boston, and it is a tavern that historically is very important. Because that was where all of the planning to, you know, attack the Brits and get them out of our country was done. Was at the Green Dragon Inn in Boston.
So you'd think the Brits could have saved themselves a lot of time and trouble if they had just shut the place down.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't think at that point in time they were smart enough to know what we were up to. We were just in there, you know, smoking and drinking and having a good time, enjoying being British.
Sure. Sure. Taking a break from whatever we did other times of the day.
Yeah. But
you know, the only thing wrong with being a British subject is the tea. God damn.
Yeah, the tea sucks. I mean, we were out there trying to unload that tea that one day, guys, and somehow or another, it just all fell in the harbor.
Oh, boy. One of my favorite restaurants in the whole world is in Boston. I mean, Boston has a lot of great restaurants.
Yeah.
I'm not a foodie, but I like good, solid American food. So every time I was in Boston and I was attending a class for the John Hancock, they would take us to restaurants around town. And I don't remember going to the Green Dragon, which may be primarily a drinking establishment. But my two favorite places were some Italian joint down near the docks that I don't even remember the name of this place, but it had fantastic Italian food. And the other one was, prime rib specialty place called Durkin, D-U-R-K-I-N, Park. And when I went to this place, it was a really, you know, it was like a 250-year-old building, and it had about 150-year-old tables and chairs in it. They were all rickety and ugly, and they had 50-year-old plus waitresses who were really cranky, but it turned out to be an act. It was hugely entertaining. Okay. There were 22 people at our table in our party, 20 women and 2 men. And so the waitress that we had, 2 waitresses, I guess, started on with the women and took their orders. And everybody ordered the same thing. The house specialty was this big, thick prime rib.
Yeah.
And by that time, they had irritated me to no end. And so when they got to me, I was sitting at the head of the table, and I was the last one to be asked what my dinner order was. I gave them my order, the same as everybody else's. I want the prime rib, medium rare. And then they said, okay, is that it? And I said, well, baked potato, blah, 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 and separate checks. And I thought that would really irritate my waitress. She said, no problem, sir, and walked away. And then I read a brochure I had in my pocket, and sure enough, this is all an act for our entertainment. Yeah. Now it's closed up. I think probably the panic got to it when everybody was wearing masks.
Yeah.
And they probably couldn't survive.
I'm thinking, you know, I'm not a huge chowder guy, clam chowder, but isn't there a restaurant in Boston that is really, really, really known for their clam chowder?
Probably so, but you couldn't prove it by me, because if I was taken there, I would not even look at the clam chowder. I'd be looking at the peanut butter sandwiches or whatever else they might have on the menu.
I can't, for the life of me, I can't think. I've been there several times because I used to travel with a
well, it's chowder. That's where chowder. Probably where chowder was invented.
We're going to go down to the harbor.
Yeah,
and we're going to get some chowder. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I
used to eat it because it was a unique experience, but you won't find me getting any clam chowder out here in Arizona because the clams have been canned in their can since about 1874 when they came in off the dock at the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah. I think what they did was they put the fresh ones in sea rations for Vietnam. And so anytime you have a leftover clam out in the boonies, like where we are, it's going to be from sea rations that were retrieved.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know something?
You should tell me we have to get to work because
you know, I am the nominal producer, so I would like to encourage you to make some money today. That's important.
I will acquiesce to that encouragement, and I'm going to dip right into it right now. The first thing might be kind of up your alley, though. I'm wondering if you might have some familiarity with this subject. This came in the email this morning, and I asked the content curator to put this on the top of the pile because I said it might be something we can ask Randy about. He has special knowledge and expertise about computer stuff, and this appears to be about a computer thing. It's a warning from one of my favorite insurance companies, United American Insurance, and it is warning us about two important things in the security field. It's actually warning everybody in the company, including agents that do a lot of business with them like me. And one of the things they're warning about is phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. We've all heard of phishing, but in case you haven't, phishing is a method by which a crook will try to trick you into giving up some of your important information so that they can steal your money. And it's a form of social engineering, according to this email. Phishing attacks use email or malicious websites to solicit personal information by posing as a trustworthy organization. For example, an attacker may send an email seemingly from a reputable credit card company or financial institution that requests your account information, often suggesting that there's a problem. When users respond with the requested information, attackers can use it to gain access to the accounts. Now, that's phishing, and that's pretty common. That we understand that there are crooks out there using tricks to try to get people's personal information. Here's a new one on me, and maybe Randy has a thought or two. It is smishing. You ever heard of that, Randy?
I have, but I may know it under a different name. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Okay, well, let me read the descriptive paragraph here. Just like phishing, which remember is spelled with P-H, smishing uses cell phones and text messages to lure consumers. Let's see this figure A for an actual smishing message recently sent. So, okay, this would not be as technologically sophisticated, I guess, as coming up with a phishing message. Often the text will contain a URL or a phone number. The phone number often has an automated voice response system. So here's a message. Says, "Hello, Zachary. Let me know if you got my text. Thanks." And it's signed J. Matthew Darden, chairman and CEO of the company in question, the Heritage Division. So it looks very important. And I would respond to this. "No, I didn't get your text, Mr. Matthew Darden." And that's apparently all it takes for something bad to happen. Let's see. If you receive a suspicious message, text message on a personal device, block the number and delete it without engaging. So what was this guy going to do? Once he got my return text, "Let me know if you got my text." And I don't know what he planned to do with the information that he gathered. You, Randy?
I'll give you an idea of where he was going.
Okay.
First of all, the protections around security on text are not nearly as sophisticated as they are on websites. So bottom line is you said there was a URL in there. Go ahead, click, "Let me know if you got my text." Well, what was going to happen is that link in your URL, that was going to take you either to a website where it says, "Oh yeah, okay, put in all your name, rank, and serial number stuff," or it was going to take you to an 800 number service that was formed up. Most of them come out of Puerto Rico, and that 800 number actually is a number that will charge you. It's not an 800 number. It's just basically a number that starts with 800, and it will charge you to the tune of about $8 a minute.
It's like those dirty telephone lines used to be.
Yeah,
900,
yeah.
They were all 900 numbers.
And they'll get you on the line, and they'll do their damnedest
to keep you there
for about, you know, at least $200 worth of shit. Oh, excuse my French. Excuse my French. That was a technical term.
This is this is a family podcast, but our family is kind of a filthy mouthed lot, so not a problem.
So I am a security expert. So let me give you a couple different recommendations here.
Okay.
If you get anything from anybody that you didn't request, delete it.
Yep.
Don't respond to it.
Yep.
Because even if you respond to it, like let's say you got an email from, Joe Doakes and so forth .com. If you open that email, guess what you've just verified for them?
You've verified that you're a sap.
You have verified that your email address is accurate and you're willing to engage.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, that's two important things that they would need to know.
That's two important things. And the same thing is essentially true for text. If you get a text from somebody you don't recognize, block it, delete it, don't click on anything. And then the third part is that if you get a call, and this happened to my neighbor to the north here. I don't think you've ever met her, but she's a wonderful woman.
I've seen her. You pointed her house out to me.
She's from Connecticut. And I tease her about her, Eastern accent. Hey, Randy, I'm going to come over. Let's go have some coffee. So anyway, I tease her about that. But she got taken in to the cleaners on this. Fortunately, I was able to intervene and stop the process. But anyway, someone called her and said, "Dear Mrs. So-and-so, your computer is filled with virus and we are going to help you clean it."
Oh boy. Yeah.
And
would know instantly that is baloney, but obviously she had her defenses were down.
Well, she's also 80 years old. So it's not like she's a tech guru, but anyway, so what they just remember one thing, no large company, your insurance company, your bank, know, the FBI, nobody is going to call you. If you want to instigate communications with someone, you get an accurate number and you contact them.
And if somebody did call you and convince you that they were who they said they were, you're better off calling that company back and asking for that individual, because that's going to ensure that you are calling the company that they purport to be from. And if you were to call your local electric company and Joe Schmo doesn't work there and they never heard of him, then you know pretty much that you were on the verge of being scammed.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well,
thank you for sharing your information. Let me whip through the rest of this thing here.
Okay, all right.
And then,
I've got some calls coming in, so I got to go.
If you make some new friends today, cut me in on some of the take.
And they're all from Puerto Rico. I don't know why.
Well, this thing does warn us to be aware that these messages are going to be, they're going to have a few things in common. They are irregular or sent from C-suite executives. So they're going to have some guy's name who sounds very important. They will have a tremendous sense of urgency, call to action that you must not ignore or bad things will happen. And they'll be full of spelling errors very often. And that's one thing that sticks out to me, because I went to Wayne School, where proper spelling and grammar were beaten into me by the teachers there. Actually, that stuff was beaten into me by my family, but some of the other kids got beaten by the teachers, not really hit, but chastised and corrected frequently until they learned how to speak properly. So this goes on to say, be careful with the information that you share online. Everybody knows that. Carefully examine email addresses. I always learned years ago to hover my mouse the little arrow that the mouse moves around on your screen, hover that over the URL that they want you to click on and look in the corner of your screen for the address, because it's not likely to be the company that they're telling you that they're from. It's likely to be some very lengthy website address from some foreign country, like Puerto Rico is almost a foreign country. And then it says set up two-factor or multi-factor authentication. Boy, that's a pain to have to deal with. I am not really happy about that. Anyway, enough about computer security. That's not so much a Medicare subject. It's more in the nature of doing good for the community. I'm happy to say that the community has probably had enough good done for it by us today. So I'm going to suggest that we take a break and bow our heads and just think quiet thoughts for just a few minutes. And we'll come right back after these commercials. All righty, we're back and we're proud. Now, at least that's a song that James Brown used to play a lot when he was a popular dude. He is now a dead dude. The next item curated for me by the content curator is headlined Lessons Learned from the Most Recent Medicare Open Enrollment. Now, the most recent Medicare Open Enrollment they're talking about, I believe, is the one that occurred from October 15th to December 7th at the end of last year. So what lessons might we have learned from the events that occurred or the sales that were made during that open enrollment period, or as we call it in the business, that AEP, annual election period, AEP, only the amateurs call it open enrollment. There was a lot to learn from the Medicare open enrollment period that took place at the end of 2023. By the way, this this article is probably aimed at the amateurs, and that's why she uses the term open enrollment rather than AEP. The open enrollment period is a time for making changes to Medicare Part D drug coverage, and it ended on December 7th. Heading into the OEP, there was a considerable excitement because of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was going to save seniors millions of dollars. But how did that play out in real time? As I do every year, I studied the 2023 OEP reviews for 65 Incorporated. That's Diane Omdahl. She wrote this article, and her company is 65 Incorporated. So she was studying the results and the reviews of that OEP for her clients. I found that 65% had at least one significant reason to change drug plans. And so here are five lessons that she learned from that period and the events that took place during that period. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services projected that the average total monthly premium in 2024 would decrease about 1.8%. Just about everybody likely expected their premiums to drop. What happened was a different story, because CMS average total monthly premium is not the one you pay. Almost 30% of our clients switched plans because their premiums were going up anywhere from $200 to $1,400 during the course of 2024. On average, they're going to save $505. What the heck? Their premiums are going up, but they're going to save $505? I don't get that. During the 2022 period, 12% switched plans with a maximum. Oh, I see. The people who switch plans because their premiums are going to go up, they would save an average of $505. During the period, the same period, 2 years, 1 year before, the maximum savings was in the neighborhood of $360. So switching plans because your premium is going up provides some savings for you. Number two of the five, non-covered insulin. The IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which didn't reduce any inflation whatsoever, capped all covered insulin at $35 a month, with the operative word being covered. In October, Diane Omdahl discovered that a client's insulin was being dropped from her plan's formulary. Digging into plan formularies, I found that 10 plans will cover fewer drugs in the following year than they did in 2023, something that I had not seen before. And she's an experienced observer of the Medicare scene. So not having seen this before is something highly unusual. All but one of our diabetic clients discovered one or two of the insulins they need would not be covered. By switching plans, the average savings was over $9,000. There were zero plan changes in 2022 because of non-covered insulin. So the prior year, there wasn't the push by the federal government for insulin makers to give their product away virtually for free. And so nobody had to change a plan because of the price of insulin or the availability of insulin being a problem. And at the end of 2023, the projection was that in 2024, insulin was going to be have an artificially low price forced upon it by the cretins that run the economy currently, and those people do not understand the supply and demand that causes a price to be what it is. All they want to do is blame the person selling the product in question and force them to sell it at a lower price. Number three, non-covered drugs. Over a third of clients changed plans because one or more of their non-insulin drugs would not be covered. If they had not changed, their out-of-pocket costs in 2024 would have ranged from $700 to $1,500. This was not a new problem during the 2023 open enrollment period. It's an annual concern, and it's one of the main reasons we encourage everybody to pay attention. There were a few clients who complained that their copays were really high for a drug they started taking during 2023. Unbeknownst to them, their plans did not cover those drugs, and going forward, they would confirm that it's covered before they pay. Number four, do not put Part D on autopilot. Don't put your drug plan on autopilot. Once again, my disclaimer, this postmortem was not a scientific study, but rather a review to identify trends and problems. What's happening with drug coverage is not limited to our clients. This is Diane Omdahl talking. Those who did not check out the changes to their drug coverage during the 2023 open enrollment period may be surprised because their costs have gone up or drugs are not covered. And finally, the last conclusion that Diane Omdahl drew from the open enrollment period in 2023, that the open enrollment period at the end of 2024 will be even more important. Effective January 1st of 2025, the Inflation Reduction Act will cap the out-of-pocket health, out-of-pocket costs for all drug members, all Part D plan members, at $2,000. The Department of Health and Human Services estimates that this will reduce out-of-pocket spending by $7.4 billion annually in 2025, nearly $400 per person. There will likely be more changes in costs and coverage as drug plans adapt to paying a bigger share of the costs. Given what happened as a result of the first wave of Inflation Reduction Act changes, it seems clear none of this will get any easier. But if you know roughly what to expect down the road, you won't feel the rush to panic. Excuse the broken record, but circle October 15th on your calendar. It is the start of the 2024 open enrollment period on your calendar, and pay attention. What you're going to get, ladies and gentlemen, is a letter from your current drug plan that tells you what changes they plan to make for the following year. So you're going to start getting those letters in the fall of 2024, and they will apply to coverage that starts January 1st of 2025. And I've got to tell you, those documents, those letters, they're called ANOC, Annual Notice of Change, A-N-O-C, ANOC. When you receive those, your first inclination will be to wad them up and throw them on the floor and stamp on them because it looks like a lawyer wrote them just to irritate you. In reality, what you should do is sit down with a stiff drink and maybe a magnifying glass because they're written on legalese typewriters with little tiny print. And you should go through the ANOC very carefully because hidden within that multi-page document is going to be a hint as to what your drug plan is going to do for the following year. It may be tripling its monthly premium. It may be dropping some drugs, including your favorite drugs, from their formulary. They might be turning on you, like I say in the book, might be turning on you like a rabid dog, and you're going to want to know that so that you can call me and say, use my drugs and tell me what the drug plan for 2025 that I should have is, or you can get my book and follow the directions. I think in chapter 10 or 11, I give very specific directions about how to pick out your own cheapest and best drug plan. And if you follow those directions, it'll be worth the cost of the book to make sure that you have a drug plan that's the least costly that will cover most of your drugs, if not all of your drugs. So that is a gift that keeps on giving. If you buy my book, you're going to find that the savings or the peace of mind that you have from having the proper drug plan is going to be worth its weight in gold. Now, I'm going to go with one more article, and then we're going to let you go because the clock on the wall is telling me that we've spent way too much time on some of this stuff. But the content curator put in two articles about artificial intelligence. This one says United Healthcare, which is the world's largest health insurance company, headquartered in Minnesota, they were hit with a class action suit over the alleged use of artificial intelligence to deny Medicare Advantage claims. What a surprise. Randy is laughing silently. United Healthcare is facing a potential class action suit following allegations that it used an algorithm to deny claims for post-acute care services in Medicare Advantage plans. The proposed class action was filed on Monday. This is a fairly recent article, I think, by the families of two deceased Medicare Advantage members. These people died, and the families are arguing that the insurance company illegally deployed an AI platform to deny medically necessary care to seniors. The lawsuit said the technology has a 90% error rate. The plaintiffs allege that despite the high error rate, United Health continued to deploy the technology because a very small number of members, less than 1%, generally appeal denied claims. And Randy and I have been down that road before. We've crunched the numbers that are reported. And frankly, these companies will not make a decision on that benefits the patient until they are forced to, because the patient refuses to give up. Those patients that give up early never get the proper treatment. The patients that keep coming back and attacking and attacking and attacking and appealing are the ones who finally find satisfaction. So defendants bank, meaning the insurance company, United Healthcare, according to this allegation, banks on patients' impaired condition, lack of knowledge, and lack of resources to appeal the erroneous artificial intelligence-powered decisions. Amid concerns about claims denials, Democrats are seeking greater oversight of Medicare Advantage plans' use of artificial intelligence. The suit comes on the heels of an investigative report from a publication which dug into the use of this particular platform. Employees at United Healthcare were pressured to use the technology to cut costs, according to that publication. In a statement to Fierce Healthcare, that's what this article was printed in, a United Healthcare spokesman said that the platform is not used to make decisions on coverage. The predictive tool is not used to make coverage determinations. The tool is used as a guide to help us inform providers, families, and other caregivers about the sort of assistance and care that the patient may need, both in the facility and after returning home. The spokesperson said that coverage decisions are based on CMS, on basically government coverage criteria, and the terms of the member's plan. So they're saying that the lawsuit has no merit, and they will defend themselves vigorously against the lawsuit. Well, the lawsuit claims that the predictive tool determines the member's eligibility for post-acute care coverage based on rigid and unrealistic predictions for recovery. The tool predicts how much care a patient should need according to lawsuits, which can lead it to override physicians' determinations on what their coverage requires. Through this, United Healthcare's post-acute care claims denials have increased significantly. That means there are more people being denied coverage that they would be approved, or they would be given coverage protection, treatment under Medicare or under United Healthcare plans prior to their starting to use this tool. So Randy and I have often talked about the fact that the bean counters in these Medicare Advantage plans, it's often the accountants and the actuaries who tell the doctors that they cannot perform certain services, or they're not going to pay for certain treatments. And in reality, it looks like maybe AI is going to be responsible for some of the suffering that their members are going through right now. But we'll see what happens with the class action suit. So, Randy, that's going to be it for today, I think. Should we ring the bell and let everybody go out to... play?
Go out to recess. Yeah, sure. I do have one comment to make about that. Based on what you were saying, reading that article about that suit that has been filed.
Yes, yes.
I wonder if that talking head from United Healthcare's nose was growing the whole time they were interviewing him.
Well, the nice thing is her employers continued to pay her a regular salary. So she could probably, she didn't care about the nose length. It was the continued employment that she was concerned about, I'm sure.
I find it very objectionable that people use AI to make decisions about people's healthcare, because I would not let AI, I mean, I use AI just to play around with, but I would not use AI to decide what color to paint my shoes. Okay.
I understand. Now, there's a school of thought that says AI is getting more sophisticated as time goes by, and we can learn to rely on it more as it learns what correct outcomes should be based on inputs. Would you agree that at some point in the future we can rely more on AI, or would you always be skeptical?
Yes. Well, okay, that's a great question, Doug. Yes, it will get more accurate. It will no doubt become more accurate, because it's the learning processes that it goes through will become more general and more widespread in terms of, you know, dealing with the world. But AI is always going to have a human overlooking it.
Okay. I think that's an important thing to remember. And it's probably United Healthcare is being accused of not having any oversight of the AI results.
No, they were just, all they cared about was the AI gave them a certain score. And, you know, the turkey at the desk that, you know, probably has a high school education hit. No, that's all it is. And bottom line is, this goes right back to my other two acronyms I have. You remember DBA?
Oh, yeah. A recent invention of yours.
Yes. DBA doesn't stand for doing business as. This is related to Medicare Advantage plans, and it stands for died before approval. And then there's DAD, which we all had a DAD. But in this particular case, it stands as related to Medicare Advantage plans. It stands for died after denial.
Well, that's apparently what happened to these people that the families are suing over. They both deceased or died as a result, they say, of neglect or following incorrect procedure protocols. Yeah.
Now, I've got to tell you, folks, just as a personal comment, Doug is the expert, but I'm also an expert on technology. And it just boggles my mind that companies don't take any more responsibility to making decisions with technology than this particular company apparently did.
Well, here's their deal. They're thinking, okay, if AI runs the show, we don't need to pay anybody to be here. And that means more bottom line for us, more profit on the bottom line. Yeah. And the other thing is, their lawyers are probably saying, if you've got a bulletproof defense for every action you take, so you lose a few patients, big deal. We can defend you in court and you won't be found liable.
You know what? The attorneys are going to come back around someday as soon as we start using AI to replace their idiots.
Well, and frankly, that day may not be too far over the horizon.
No. Well, in my opinion, the only good attorney is a dead attorney, and everybody needs an attorney head on their mantle.
Well, I would say that, but I have an attorney client who is living near Washington, D.C., who sends me excellent material for this podcast every once in a while. I don't mention his name because I don't want an angry torch, bearing mob to attack him when he's going about his daily business. I do appreciate the input, the information that he sends us.
Yeah, I do too. I'm being a little facetious about that, but bottom line is there's a lot of attorneys in the world that are only interested in one thing, and that's to feather their own nest.
It used to be that law schools were limited in how many graduates they would throw out into the society every year. And I believe they have just decided that, hey, the more graduates we have, the more tuition dollars we can collect. So let's open the doors and let many, many more lawyers descend upon the society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have probably used up my 75 cents, or at least a nickel or a dime of yours. So We need to close shop up. We need to land the plane. But before I do, as always, there's some important facts that you need to remember and make note of if you can. You can reach out to Doug at an email address of dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Just remember, Doug is licensed nationwide. And as far as I know, he never intends to use any AI with that. Bottom line, he also can be, you know, reviewed, contacted, looked at MedicareForTheLazyMan.com website. And we would also appreciate a couple of reviews being dropped because Doug works very hard on this content. And bottom line is it's all about the numbers in the podcast business. Last but not least, thank you for joining us. You could have been a number of different places doing 17 different things, and you weren't. You were with us on this nice sunny day in Arizona and 78 degrees. And I will say probably because it was so nice out, you weren't watching your watch. But we have spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy originally from Oklahoma. No more. He's up in the high ground behind Cave Creek, Arizona, watching over the Medicare zombies.
The Medicare Advantage zombies.
And he can see them from where he's at. And yep. He watches them every day. And bottom line, he protects the area from that scourge of Medicare Advantage zombies. Well, and I'm gonna put him in at about, oh, I'll be nice today, 6,300 feet.
That's not bad because it's warming up here in Arizona, ladies and gentlemen. Spring has sprung, and we will be looking for you to join us at our next episode. Bye-bye.